So welcome. It's wonderful to be here with you. Some of you again, some of you for the first time during this particular retreat. And to spend these next couple of weeks or the next month together in a way that's really quite unique, quite special in our culture. As we enter into retreat, each one of us alone, and also together as a group, we're creating, or we could say we're co-creating, a temporary village here, a temporary spiritual practice community. As we begin this period of time together, this period of commitment to exploring, to cultivating, and deepening our inner life, deepening our capacity for a very clear, focused attention, and deepening our understanding, our insight into the nature of things. I think for many, many people, there's a tremendous amount of time and energy spent, or maybe more accurately, expended cultivating an outer life, doing all kinds of things, producing things, acquiring things, going places, being somebody, being something. This month, or these next 2 weeks, or this month, will be quite special and unique in that none of this is really important. None of this will be asked of you in the ordinary ways of the seeming requirements and expectations of the world. So whether you've practiced in this style of retreat before, maybe many times, or if an extended, intensive, and more self-disciplined retreat time is new for you, or relatively new for you, you may know the experience that happens for many of us at the onset of a retreat, and sometimes happens during the retreat as it's going along. This sense of entering into a sacred time and space, entering into a kind of sanctuary, both within our surroundings and within ourselves. And for me, whether I'm teaching or whether I'm entering into a personal period of intensive practice, there's always this feeling in my heart of entering into sacred time, entering into sacred space, both within my own mind and my own heart, and within the space around me. So the sacredness of all the life surrounding us here, the incredible diversity and natural rhythms of life happening all around us. The weather, all of its changes just today, for instance. The changes in the light to dark, then to light, then to dark again. And this early spring season, with all of the ongoing changes that are occurring and will continue to occur. All of the life forms, the community of beings, we could say, that we share this place with. Many birds and other creatures. The trees and all of the various manifestations of plant life. The insects, they will be around. And the air itself. All of this constantly changing, beginning and ending, birthing and dying, arising and passing away. this natural world so close around us, so easily available to connect with. It's a great gift that we're not separate from. It's a great gift that in fact holds us in itself. This natural world is a great teacher of the sacred, and the perfectly natural fluidity and diversity and change that just simply is. It's a mirror of the truth of ourself, our nature as nature. And considering that nature is no problem to itself, it's no problem to itself in itself, we can learn from this mirror of naturalness, the just isness, the just beingness, the absolutely open-hearted presence, we might say, of this perfectly natural world. So it's really no surprise that us humans are drawn to places like this, places where untarnished naturalness and beauty are quite easily accessible. I think many of us experience a very natural, open-hearted connection in moments of a simple, clear presence. When we take the time to really truly arrive and take the time to just simply be. To just simply be, for instance, maybe this afternoon with yourself, with the late afternoon light, or maybe tomorrow morning with the early morning sunrise, or any morning, or the changing sky colors at the close of a day. Or at some point, maybe just sitting beside the defrosting or the flowing river that's nearby. Or very open-heartedly seeing the particulars of how late winter and early spring displays itself in small ways or in larger ways. And of course, along with any of this, moments of silence, moments of simple, clear presence in the body, the heart, the mind, any time of the day, any time of the night. One day in the 92nd year of my mother's life, we were out for our daily walk. And she stopped for a few moments during that walk one day and stooped over and silently for a long look, she just took a deep look at a flower that was very full in its blooming, very full in its liveliness. And after some moments of really just taking it in, looking at it very deeply, she said, "It's great to be alive." Probably to each of us has come some unexpected, unsuspected, and maybe even exceptional moments during times of simple presence. These moments of a clear, fettered, unfettered attention. And we could call these moments moments of spiritual attention. Our heart, our mind opens. Our heart, our mind relaxes. And it eases in the midst of a simple, direct presence with things. And the natural world is often the place where this happens for most of us easily, at least at first. Sometimes in these moments of spiritual attention, it's as though we fall through ordinary appearances. We fall through ourselves we fall through our usual habitual selves into an intuitive place of the essence of things. Our heart, our mind, opens with an unfettered receptivity, a kind of radical acceptance, in which there's a deep sense of connection, and maybe a sense of selflessness, or a healthy, wholesome sense of emptiness, both inwardly and outwardly. And then we might touch the boundlessness, the wonder, the very transient, constantly changing radiance of life. For maybe just a moment, we might dissolve with a boundless heart, a boundless mind, out of our seemingly solid, separate, static sense of self, into the surprise of the moment, the unexpected surprise of the reflection of the truth and the wonder of it all, the just isness of it all, the surprise of a momentary experience of a not separate self, the surprise of a healthy emptiness. For just a moment, we might wake up to this sense, this unexpected surprise, the reflection of the heart, the mind, its true connection in this very simple, unconditional moment. And in a place like this, there's quite a degree, actually, of accumulated energy. All of the people who have come here to learn and to practice, all of those who have come here to reflect, to do inner work, to explore, investigate the nature of things, all of the teachings that have been offered here and all of the teachers that have offered them, it's really a wonderful symbiotic expanding energy that we're both partaking of and adding to. And so, here we are. And during these retreat days, we have the great gift of being taken care of in a really beautiful and simple way. All of our basic needs are being met. While we're here, life is pared down. It's simplified from your usual daily life activities, the usual seeming demands and seeming needs of daily life. There's not really very much to do over these next weeks. There's sitting and walking, eating, hearing, spending a little bit of time every day with your yogi jobs, sleeping, and most importantly, cultivating a clear focus of attention and bringing this attention to your particular experiences of body, heart, and mind. So compared to the ways of the world, there's really not very much to do over these next weeks, which is a very good thing to remember, because some of you may have such a strong habit of keeping busy that you may go on creating all sorts of things to do just simply out of habit, when really there isn't much to do at all. So in this light, one of the things that we're practicing while we're here is renunciation. And in this case, meaning letting go of busyness, letting go of the usual distractions that you use, that you engage in to try to relax out of all the busyness. And what a gift it is, this renunciation, this letting go. It's really not usual at all in our culture to take the time to engage our energy in the way that we're doing, we're going to do. To really simplify our lives, to spend time looking inward, to come to a place like this to just simply be. To really just simply be. Not to become anything. Not to become anybody. Not to fill up the mind with more stuff. But again, to just simply be. Connecting and looking inward. Looking directly at your experience, just as it is, moment to moment. And so we begin together in a kind of sanctuary. Being here together in this place of safety and protection. This place that holds and engenders deep respect and acceptance. It's really a valuable gift that each of you have given to yourself for this next couple of weeks or month. And that you also give to each other by simply being here with each other. I know that for just about everybody, there are many different kinds of feelings that come up at the onset of a retreat. Maybe there's some excitement, or maybe a little bit of anxiety or nervousness, a little bit of worry maybe. Maybe there's some feelings of delight, or maybe there's a feeling of great relief. There's lots of energy moving through the body, the heart, and the mind. Even for people who have sat many, many retreats, and as some of you have heard me share this one before, I have a friend who was about to enter into his either third or fourth three-month retreat. And I asked him how he was feeling the evening before the retreat began. And his response to me was, "Oh, I'm feeling the obligatory fear." You're not obliged, of course, to feel that, but for me, with teaching or beginning a personal retreat, many of these flavors of energy move through my body, my heart, my mind. It's human nature, entering into something new, a little added energy moving through the body and the heart that has many different tones or many different flavors to it. And how fortunate it is that we're embodied as we are, embodied in human form, this precious human existence, this precious human existence that makes it possible to practice, that makes it possible to be able to look within and to cultivate a pure, kind, and balanced heart, balanced mind, with the possibility of the liberation that clear insight into the nature of things brings. We're actually a minority, a small minority on this planet, in the universe, and of course, who knows beyond. So if you think about it for a moment, there are many, many more insects than human beings on this planet. I have a friend here in Taos who owns a nursery, a plant nursery, and she told me that there are 200 million bugs per human on this planet. Believe it or not, I guess. So how fortunate to be embodied in the way that we are. This human heart, mind, and body are really the most conducive towards developing kindness, compassion, joy, equanimity, and the great gift of understanding, the great gift of wisdom. Because of the particular mixture that each one of us has of both pleasure and pain, there's just enough of each. Sometimes a little more of one, sometimes a little more of the other. And at times maybe big handfuls of one and seemingly not much or any of the other. But the truth is that it changes back and forth, within a week, daily, even within moments. So really this human realm offers the best conditions that we could ask for. There are beings that primarily live in what could be called the lower realms, where the intensity of suffering is so great that it's impossible or nigh unto impossible to develop the wholesome qualities of heart and mind that are needed for practice. And I'm sure that each one of us in this room have been in those lower realms at times and know that place of tremendous fire, tremendous contraction. That place where it might feel impossible to be present with your experience, where it might feel impossible to connect with goodness, acceptance, kind-heartedness, joy, compassion, or any degree of equanimity, let alone wisdom. And then there are the higher realms, what we could call the higher planes of existence, where everything is so blissful that there's maybe very little inspiration to practice. And I'm sure that everyone in this room, every one of us, have tasted this. Moments of it, or maybe for longer periods of time. Life is utterly blissful. And there's no inspiration, in fact, in those moments to do anything else. And if we have a practice, it might just fly right out the window in those moments. We forget that life isn't always like that. Life isn't always so blissful. That we don't always get what we want. That life doesn't always go our way. In blissful moments, it's easy to forget that in fact we still have our spiritual work to do. So this realm that we live in most of the time, this is the place. This is the place we can open to our perfectly natural capacity to open-heartedly connect within ourselves, letting the inherent intuitive understanding of the true nature of things to very naturally and simply unfold and blossom. It's said if all the world were water and a wooden ring 1 foot in diameter was thrown out upon the water and then blown about by the winds, it's said that a blind turtle surfacing once every 100 years would put its neck through this wooden ring more easily than one can obtain a precious human existence. We're that rare of a species. We're that rare of a species within this enormous breadth of forms, life forms on this planet. There's an ancient teaching that says, those who have a precious human existence with all of the conditions, all of the opportunities, and all of the blessings in place to meet the Dharma and to practice the Dharma, to practice the way of truth, to practice the way of the heart, that these beings are as rare as daytime stars. And so, here we are, a group of daytime stars. who have a really wonderful month or 2 weeks ahead of us, a time of cultivation and discovery, a time of exploration, purification, and understanding, which some of the time might not be so easy and may even be quite challenging at times. But all the while, it also includes the potential of bringing forth an experience of calm, tranquility, joy, understanding, wisdom, and illumination. As we enter into this period of sustained spiritual practice, there are a few specific supports that are very readily available to you here. So now I'd like to just briefly look at the first of these with you, and then Annie will continue on talking with you about the rest of the supports. Our first support is the wonderful gift of silence. This silence that very gently holds us in itself. Silence is quite amazing in certain ways. It doesn't expect anything. It doesn't judge. Silence is infinitely patient, boundlessly spacious, open, allowing, accepting. This container of silence that has no boundaries and that everything comes out of and returns to. And of course, within the silence, there are sounds, all kinds of sounds, sounds that arise and pass. At times, you'll hear the sound of my voice, you'll hear the sound of Annie's voice, occasionally, probably other voices. And maybe you'll hear sighs, you might hear cries, laughs, coughs, sneezes, the sound of squeaky old floors, the roar of engines, the sound of dogs and birds, maybe the sound of water when the river is flowing and you're nearby. There might be wind sounds and other weather sounds. There will be wind sounds and other weather sounds. The myriad sounds of the natural world, all kinds of sounds arising and passing in the midst of the silence. And sometimes we interpret sound as noise. It's actually important to note that this is an interpretation. And to notice it. Watch your mind. Is this or that sound noise? What happens if it's noise? Are you relaxed? Is your heart open to simply hearing and receiving the sound? Or is there a contraction, some form of aversion, a feeling of resistance, a sense of being disturbed, a sense of separation? If it's just a sound, our relationship to it is one of acceptance. Again, that radical acceptance. Just simply and directly connecting with and hearing and knowing the tone or the quality of the sound, which you might perceive as pleasant or unpleasant, along with the arising and passing nature of the sound. And of course, we're not always in this relationship to sound. So with an open heart, just mindfully notice. Notice your relationship and your response or your reaction to sound without judgment in the midst of silence. And sometimes within silence, it feels as though all the windows of the world, all the windows of the universe, maybe all the windows of life itself, have been thrown wide open. And when this is our experience, we may have a sense of freshness, as though an open-hearted receptivity, a fresh clarity, has been let in. An amazing thing about silence is that when we really truly begin to hear it, when we really drop into it, we find that it's not dead. Silence isn't flat. Silence charges the air, we could say. And I've been told that, in fact, the Thais, people from Thailand, have a number of words for silence to delineate all its various subtle qualities. It's a very precious aspect of retreat life. Sometimes people may feel a little bit, maybe no one in this room, I don't know, but a little bit of anxiety about being silent for so long, not days or not moments or days, but weeks, and in the company of other people. Maybe it'll seem like at some point it might be awkward or a little bit strange or too difficult. But as many of you know, and I can honestly say that most people, by the end of a retreat, or somewhere along the way of a retreat, feel that silence is really one of the most precious aspects of retreat life. Because it holds everything, but it holds on to nothing. Everything just simply comes and goes in the spacious, patient acceptance of silence. And the key here, again, is that you don't have to be anybody. You really don't have to be anybody special at all. You don't have to present yourself. You don't have to be somebody, or you don't have to become somebody. You just simply be. And actually, it's a really great relief for most of us to just simply be. Silence is where we learn to really listen, to really hear, where we learn to see and to understand. In this container of silence lies the possibility for the boundless capacity of our heart to be known, to be experienced. And within this, we begin to see and to know the true nature of all things, which of course includes the true nature of ourself. And I just wanted to briefly mention a couple of very practical pointers in terms of supporting the silence. It's helpful as we go through the days and weeks together to not purposefully making eye contact with another, unless it's appropriate in its specific circumstances, which it may be at certain times. So respecting and honoring your own and others' inner work through this. Eye contact, as we know, can be a very powerful nonverbal form of communication. If you keep a journal, keep it very simple, or not at all. But if you do keep a journal and you want to continue, keep it very simple during the retreat. Just a few notes, practical notes, are the best thing during a retreat. Next chapter of your book, or the greatest poem you've ever written, or the worst poem you've ever written. Just keeping it minimal. And also not reading books, not reading magazines. Another aspect of protecting this container of silence. In other words, not filling the mind with more stuff. There's already a lot there, plenty in the mind. So this is really the first support, silence. And I always take some time to explore it at the onset of a retreat, because there's really so much more to it than just not talking. This great support for our practice together. And so now Annie will continue talking with you about the rest of the supports that are here for you during this retreat.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. thrilled to be back in Taos, teaching the Dhamma, sharing the Dhamma with you. Most of you I've met before, but welcome. So Marcia was talking about the supports that are there to help to hold us here as part of the container here on retreat. It's also traditional at the beginning of a retreat as one of the supports to take the refuges and precepts aloud for us to chant them together as a group. And we do this in a way, you could say, to set the stage for what we're about to do, preparing the heart-mind for the undertaking of this retreat. So it almost kind of opens the heart so that it can receive the teachings, lets the teachings go in. So when we talk about refuge, what really do we mean? What does it mean to take refuge? Well, when we take refuge in something, we see that something as a place of safety, as something that holds us, as a form of protection. So in terms of coming on a retreat like this, coming to do a retreat like this, or perhaps if we've dedicated our lives to the Dharma, then we would see the Buddha Dharma Sangha as our refuge, and you know, that's what we take refuge in here on retreat. It's also a way of acknowledging and affirming, you might say, what we're doing here, bringing voice to what we're coming here to do, doing it aloud. Most of you, I think, are fairly familiar with the practice. You've done a fair amount of practice. So taking refuge is not something new to you. Also, what's helpful, especially if it's not new, is that we bring it to life so that it's real, so that it's true for us when we take these refuges and precepts. Because it can sometimes hear, oh, this is what we do, it's kind of traditional, the beginning of a retreat, and we just do it kind of as rote. But can we bring it to life? So if we're old yogis, so to speak, in terms of having done this practice a fair amount, can it be fresh? Can we bring it to life? But on the other side, if we're fairly new to practice, sometimes it can feel like it's a little bit contrived. And we might think that we have to conjure up some kind of special feeling when we take these refuges and precepts. And that's not true either. So really it's about coming from a very true place within us, wherever we are with these refuges and precepts. You know, so we might have the feeling, oh, I'm not so sure about these refuges and precepts, but I'm going to give over to them from wherever I am within myself. So you can feel there's an openness of heart when we take refuge. And then, of course, with time, and many of you may already have seen this, we see that to take refuge is really an integral and important part of our practice, because we see that it really is a support for us. As time goes on, we feel how grounding it is to just bring the refuges or the precepts to mind at any particular time in our daily life. In fact, in particular, in times of difficulty, we'll see that the refuge of Buddha Dharma Sangha really is a support to us in our lives. The aspect of reverence or veneration or respect, you might say, also paves the way to our surrendering to Buddha Dharma Sangha. It allows for that giving over to something greater than the wisdom that I have in my little mind or my understanding to something greater than ourselves. It's that giving way, giving space to receive the teachings of the Buddha. It's also a way of expressing gratitude. A way you could say, we're saying thank you to the Buddha for the teachings that he's given us. Interestingly enough, even the Buddha, after his enlightenment, reflected on the importance of refuge, of respect, of veneration. And he said that if one does not have something to express respect for or veneration, then we dwell ill at ease. Now think of that. Now if we don't have anything to feel that is of respect or veneration in our lives, or is a place of refuge and support for us in our lives, and you can imagine that there is a feeling of being a little bit shaky, of being ill at ease in our lives. Where can we turn for support, for true support? So the Buddha says that it's really important, and he himself looked for something to have as a source of refuge and veneration in his own life, even the Buddha. And he looked around for someone to revere, and then he realized, wait a minute, there is no one with a higher depth of wisdom than he himself. He said, all right, well, there's no one for me to show respect to. But then he realized, well, there is the Dharma. And so that was his place of showing reverence and his place of refuge. So even for the Buddha, and so that shows how important these refuges and precepts are, that they really do support us in our practice. So taking a look then at the triple gem, this is what we take refuge in. The first of the triple gems, the Buddha, this is taking refuge in the man himself who actually did the practice and reached the highest level of wisdom, complete liberation. So we acknowledge this. This is what he did. This was his feat. This is what he achieved. So we're taking refuge in that. In addition to that, we're also acknowledging our own potential for full liberation. It's important to bring this into play. This is possible for us too. So when we take refuge in Buddha, we're acknowledging this aspect for ourselves too. And then in the Dharma, this is taking refuge in the teachings, sometimes called the law, sometimes called the way. The teachings that the Buddha so compassionately gave to us so that we too might come to full liberation. So we take refuge in the teachings, and then we take refuge in the Sangha. Now there's three levels that we can look at in terms of the Sangha. The first level, the lowest level, you might say, are those beings who have come to the Dharma and are practicing it with considerable sincerity and effort, really putting effort. And that, you could say, is the group of all of us here practicing. That this is part of our Sangha that we take refuge in, the support together as a group, sincerely practicing the Dharma. Then there's the second level that we might feel as our support. And that is a group of people that have done considerable practice, come to some considerable depth of understanding, and then can be a support to us. So they're there to support us in our practice, support us by offering the teachings to us. Then there's the third level of the Sangha. And I'd like to talk a little bit about this third level, because several years ago, I was reading a book, one of Achan Chah's books, that I'd had for many years and I'd read several times in the past. Achan Chah is one of my favorite teachers. So I was reading this little passage. He was talking about taking refuge in, taking refuge in Buddha Dharma Sangha, and he spoke about the Sangha, and he spoke about it in terms of the three levels, the two levels that I've already mentioned. And this is what he had to say about this highest level. He said, "This is the group of those whose practice has led them to the body, speech, and mind of the Buddha. They are above the world, free of the world, and are free of all attachment and clinging. These are known as arhants, or free ones, the highest level of the noble ones." So do you notice anything about these words of his? Anything strike you about them? He's talking about this highest group of the Sangha in the present tense. That they're still alive. These fully liberated beings. He's not saying they were last centuries ago, but he's talking about them in the present tense. And this is what struck me when I read this. And it really transformed the way I took refuge. When I took refuge in Buddha Dharma Sangha, it was as though from then onward something new was mingled in the mind. It was as though I was bringing that possibility of full liberation into the equation in a way that I had never done before. Because we take refugees, Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, but really to bring and mingle that into the mind, take refuge in the arhants that are living. We may not know them, we may not see them, but they're around. Because that alters our own aspiration. It makes a difference to what we aspire to as well. Not just deepening the practice, but full liberation. Because when we take refuge, when we bring voice to it, bring it to the forefront of consciousness, it reawakens our own aspiration. It nourishes that inner aspiration that's within us to come to full liberation. And it's not that we're grasping after it or getting stressed out about it. It's just that we're bringing it into the forefront of consciousness. So we take refuge in Buddha Dharma Sangha. And then taking a look at the precepts, we take refuge in Buddha Dharma Sangha, and then we take the precepts too. These two are a support, a really important support for us, both here on retreat and in our daily lives. On retreat, we hold them in a slightly tighter way as a support for us in our working towards renunciation and supporting ourselves to dedicate ourselves totally to the practice while we're here, so that there are no distractions for us other than being here, giving ourselves to the fullness of the practice. So they're guidelines by which we live our lives as well. Not as in a rigid kind of way, a thou shalt kind of way, but really we bring them into consciousness and reflect on them. What do they mean for us? So we'll go through each of them and consider, how do I hold this? How do I work with it? How do I bring it to life? How does it have meaning for me in my life? So of course they protect us too. They are both a protection for us to not harm ourselves and to not harm others. So if we take a look, where are they? We're going to very shortly go through these refuges and precepts, chant them together. But first I'll go through them just to remind us as to what they are. Undertaking the training to refrain from harming living beings. Bringing this to mind as we chant the precept. Of course, very likely we don't harm big beings like human beings or kill them. But always bringing to mind the small creatures while we're here. Marcia mentioned them in her talk. Taking care how we relate to all creatures of all sizes. Undertaking the training to refrain from stealing or taking what's not given. And this might be in ways that we may not even feel is stealing. I'll borrow that umbrella that's out there. You know, it's if it hasn't been offered, then can we let it be? Not taking what hasn't been offered to us. We're just nipping into the kitchen to get a glass or something that hasn't been offered, so we're realizing that that's breaking that precept, taking what's not offered. The third precept, Marcia has spoken about it in one way. Here we're holding noble silence, but it's refraining from harming others with our speech. So we're really supported here on retreat by working with noble silence. But we might include in this aspect writing notes. Sometimes we feel it's just an irresistible urge to write a note to that person that's snoring in the hall, or one of the many little quirks that we all have in one way or another. And we feel it's our duty to let that person know. But, you know, this is one way that we can consider it being wrong speech. Because we don't know what's going on with another person in their practice. You know, they could be going through some particular place in their practice, and they open this note, and whoa, for the next 4 days, those words are reverberating through the heart mind. So any trouble you might be having with anything, please let one or whoever you might be having an interview with that day, speak to them, speak to the manager, leave one of us a note, but please don't, you know, indulge in that urge to leave someone else that very important note. The fourth precept, undertaking the training. I think I'm missing one here. Okay, where have we got? False speech? Okay, then undertaking the training to refrain from intoxicants. That's the fifth precept. I think I've been through four, five. Sorry, I'll have to...
You forgot one,
Did I? Mm-hmm. Oh, maybe that's a Freudian slip. but really, I'll have to say I'm a little jet lagged. There's always some excuse, isn't there? Okay, number three. I'm sorry, and the glasses and all of that. Okay, number three. Now I was just testing you. All right, undertaking the training from any kind of sexual activity at all on retreat. Okay, so just watching our sexual energy. When it arises, can it simply be known, experienced? Okay, this is another arising that's impermanent like everything else. Just noticing it and letting it go. Seeing if we can work with it in that way. So, I had done the fourth, now we'll go to the fifth precept. Refraining from intoxicants. Here again, we're pretty safe in a way, you could say, on retreat. It's pretty cut and dried. So, no intoxicants or substances that cloud the mind. And this doesn't include any medication that we may be on. So, any medications you're on, please continue with them. But intoxicants for the sake of indulgence or recreational drugs of any kind, please, abstaining altogether. So, are we going to do all eight? No. Okay. So for now we're just going to leave it at the first five precepts, and then later on within the next few days, anybody that wants to take all eight precepts will incorporate that later on. So those are the first five precepts. So let's compose ourselves. Let the energy settle within the heart-mind. Well, together, I think you've each got your sheets somewhere there. So letting the energy settle down to the heart area, and just from a simple, sincere place within, we'll do the refuges and precepts together, since we all know them. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Panatipata Veeramini Sikkhapadaṃ Samādhiyāmi. Adinadana Veeramini Sikkhapadaṃ Samādhiyāmi. Abrahmacharya Veeramini Sikkhapadaṃ Samādhiyāmi. Musavada Veeramini Sikkhapadaṃ Samādhiyāmi. Sura Maria Majapamadatana Veeramini Sikkhapadaṃ Samādhiyāmi. Idaṃ me silaṃ magapalanyanasa pachayo hotu. Marcia spoke of the first important support of silence. I've spoken of the support of taking the refuges and precepts. In addition to that, there is another support. And you may have already seen them, but not realize that it's part of the support. On the notice board is a posted schedule for you, retreat schedule, different times for sitting and walking, etc. This is just a guideline for you, not something you have to adhere to rigidly, but it's there as a support for you to work with at times if it feels supportive. Now, for some people, they find sticking to that schedule very helpful. Some people have a very kind of floaty mind that finds kind of a very set schedule very, very supportive. Other people have minds that are much tighter, and a set schedule like that is not quite so helpful. That kind of person needs to be a little more fluid with the schedule. So it'll be helpful for you to take a look at that schedule for yourself. What would be helpful for you? And of course, it changes as the days change too. So just notice, what's happening with me? Is it helpful for me to sit in the hall because I'm floating around outside a little bit too much? Would it be helpful to come and sit in the hall with a few other people, help to ground myself in the practice, help to allow for the aspiration to awaken, to really ground itself within? Or if we're feeling a little tight, perhaps we realize, oh, you know, I can work in a more fluid way with this schedule. So the schedule is there as a support. Some of the times are really important that you do come to the hall, though. That is the early morning, the chant, the 8:30 sit, where we give an additional support, actually, of doing the reflection in the morning. I think it's at 8:30. That's a very helpful sit to come to. People usually come as a group, and we give a little reflection on the Dharma in the morning, and then the Dharma talk in the evening. Those three are very helpful to really stick to. But within the rest of the day, you might work with that schedule according to what feels onward leading for your practice. So for something to be onward leading, it takes mindfulness to realize, wait a minute, am I getting too tight or am I getting too floaty? Oh, the guided sits. Thank you. In addition to that, there's a guided sit in the evenings. So there's a Dharma talk some evenings where we'll do the refuges and precepts again on the Dharma talk nights. And then in addition to the Dharma talks, there's also a guided sit. Come to those as well. You'll find them very helpful. Yeah, guided instructions on the practice. Come to those too. So in addition to that, there are the interviews. The interviews begin tomorrow. This too is a support for your practice. Sometimes you think, oh, what am I going to go to the interview for? I've got nothing to say. But then you come to the interview and you just, by the way, mention something and ping! Something really clicks. You suddenly understand something, or you hear something that you just really speaks to you. So really, the interviews are there too as a support for you. There are interviews almost every second day, and in addition to the scheduled interviews, there are options for sign-ups as well. So if you feel you need some added support, there'll be the option for a sign-up as well. I think I've covered all of the extra supports, but are there any questions? Anything that's not clear? It's very possible. Okay, so please check the board, because there'll be interviews tomorrow. So check the board to see. We will be alternating interviews as well. You'll see me one time, Marcia the next time, and that's how the interviews will go. Okay, so we're going to close the evening with just a very short sit, our first sit together as a group. Letting go of our lives out in the world. Letting the attention attention settle here now. In the body as it's sitting. Feeling how the energy settles as we familiarize ourselves with the experience of being in this body. Noticing the stillness in the room. Letting in the experience that's there. If there's tiredness, then we know that. Letting it in. Discomfort, we let that in. The body sitting and breathing. we'll see you in the hall at 5:30 tomorrow morning. 5:30. Have a good night's rest.